everyone, and welcome to another episode of Wisdom Chat. I'm your host, Phil Holdsworth from Aurum Gold, and my guest today is Tony Redondo. Tony, thank you so much for coming back onto Wisdom Chat.
You're very welcome, Phil. Thank you for having me back.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Now, Tony, you're a multi-award winning currency expert, aren't you?
It is alleged.
Yeah, somebody told me somewhere. I heard it whispered on the grid.
Exactly. But keep it quiet. Shh.
Yeah. No, Tony, I was really looking forward to having a chat with you. I know we've been chatting prior to recording, but I was really looking forward to having a chat with you because the newsletters that you put out, they're excellent. And they're really informative, but in such a way that draw in the everyday person, I believe, because you're not going into such technical details, but you're really helping us to gain a snapshot of what's going on, whether it's an annual review or whether it's a particular topic area like property or currency or whatever it is. I just like your style, and it helps, you know, a pleb like me being able to understand what's going on. But the one thing that really grabbed my attention, I would say, to start with, was when you did recently a review of the last 12 months, it caused me to stop in my tracks and think about the messages that we have been hearing as a general populace from the so-called experts, about the doom and gloom, for example, that we are going into recession and it's going to last to at least 2024 and it's going to be horrendous.
Yeah.
And recently, we've been getting very encouraging words. And even just today, I saw a message saying, you know, we want to, actually, it was actually in your review where you said that we were one of the fastest growing economies in the G7 group.
Yeah, that's right.
Just give us a sort of take on that, Tony. Just fill it out a bit more because, yeah, the doom and gloom mongers, of which there are plenty.
There are plenty.
Really have got it wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And they usually do. You know, there's an old saying, Phil, that, you know, bad news sells newspapers. So, you know, were anybody involved in the financial markets know it's very easy to talk things down. You've got to be a very brave person to talk things up. And so the trend tends to be on the negative. What I find particularly difficult, and the reason why I highlighted it to the extent that I did, is that, of course, you know, I've worked all my life in a private sector. And of course, in a private sector, the oldest trick in the book for an incoming chief executive is to come in and highlight everything that's wrong. And of course, it's all the fault of the other guy. And I'm here to clean it up. But of course, it's going to be very tough and very difficult. You lower the expectations, you get to work, and lo and behold, if it's really bad, the previous guy still gets all the fault, and you're in the clear, and chances are it won't be quite as bad, and then you're a genius. Now, that's the private sector. It's an age-old trick. I've seen it, as I'm sure you have in your, you know, career, time and again. What I find frightening is that the chief doom and gloomers in the UK at the moment are not in a private sector, quite the opposite. The private sector continues to defy the odds, and month after month after month, week after week after week, you get data releases showing better than expected, you know, we didn't go into recession. Economic growth was slightly better than expected. Inflation, you know, is coming down. Unemployment, you know, is very, very low by international standards, and so on and so on. But the difference is that that chief executive might be a huge company, but it's one company out of thousands just in the UK.
Yeah.
The doom and gloomers that are dominating the headlines and have been since certainly last September when there was a change of government with the emergency budget and what have you. What I find very frightening and very dangerous for the country is that the doom and gloomers are in the public sector. They are the Treasury mandarins, the civil servants, the Bank of England. These are people that are being put in positions of responsibility, and so they're not looking at the narrow view of my company. They're supposed to be taking the helicopter view of the whole country. And to escape them from the everyday pressures that we face in the private sector, of course, they are funded with the magic money tree of taxpayers' funds. So you'd expect them to rise above the everyday concerns of us mere plebs, as you very interestingly put, in the private sector, and take a more broader view and a more sensible view. But quite the opposite is happening. They are talking down the economy. We've now got the highest tax stake in the UK since the end of the Second World War, and they're seeing, a report comes out from the IMF slating the UK economy, and they jump on it as proof. Let me ask, let me give you a rhetorical question. I started in the City of London in 1985. Okay, so as my teenage daughter would say, I'm a bit of a dinosaur, but there you go, that's another story for another day. I cannot honestly remember a single forecast from the World Bank, the IMF, whoever, excuse me, that got it right. And yet they give this forecast, and the doom and gloomers, the civil servants, the Treasury, the Bank of England, and all the rest of them take it as gospel. And it never pans out that way. It never has done, it never will do. You ask yourself why.
Well, I was just thinking that same thing. Why do they tend to go down that route? I mean, what I've seen more and concerning about this is the media jumping on the same bandwagon. And the
Absolutely.
trouble is, when it comes to things like the media, the numbers of people who, like you were saying, the higher echelons of government and the wider government, accepting these and sort of taking it in and being themselves doom mongers. But even the public, many in the public will take as what the media says is gospel and just say, oh, it's terrible, it's terrible. So everybody's panicking and you can see stress levels rising.
Absolutely.
And yet, when you're looking
Absolutely.
at the actual facts, and I always say to people, but what do the facts tell you? Why
Absolutely.
is it that, the people who are running our nation seemingly are oblivious to the facts around them?
I think that's because largely, if you remember back, I certainly remember back, to my early days in the City of London in the 80s. And remember, sort of, the Margaret Thatcher talking about she knew the cost of a pint of milk. How many of our politicians, how many people in the Bank of England, how many people in the civil service know the cost of a pint of milk? They don't have that same discipline, and rather than putting it to good use. Now, the good news I see is that the people, the majority of the economy, the wealth producing part of the economy for the country is the private sector. And because we've got that discipline that we start a month on day one at zero and we've got bills to pay, so whether we feel like it or not, whether the weather's good or not, you've just got to make it happen. It's down to you. We tend to defy the odds and just get on with it anyway. Because one of the, I read recently about how you can't control the strength or direction of the wind, but what you can do is adjust your sails.
Exactly.
And that's what the private sector has always been very good at doing, Not because we're brighter or better than anybody else, but because we have to survive.
And that comes right back to the sort of base nature of humanity. We are adaptable creatures, yet we forget that. We've lost sight of that sometimes. And we do tend to adapt. Sometimes some people need to ask for help, and that's fine. That's not a sign of weakness, but they just have to, they just need a little help and support. And I think when you look at what we've been through as a nation and as a globe, with the pandemic, you know, it's understandable that, you know, a lot more people will need help and support. And I just look at some of the decision making and I just stand aghast at it. I just think I cannot understand where they're coming from. When I think about the global market, it's more of a positive, I suppose. So the doom and gloom mongers would have us believe that, we're all doomed, as they would say on Dad's Army.
I was just thinking that.
We're all doomed. I just love his story when he says, have you heard the story of the empty barn? No, and they all gather around to listen. He goes, it was empty.
But, wow.
You know, I just think about, you know, we laugh at things like that, and yet, actually, we're seeing some of our politicians almost like behave in the same way and seemingly not have a real grasp of reality. So coming back to reality then, looking at our standing on the global market, how would you see us right now as a nation, both in terms of our currency and how we stand in the global market?
Really, really good question. I would say to you, and again, it is part of this negative bias of the mainstream media. One of the most, I think, I am sure in my own mind, rightly or wrongly, and only time will tell, but in my own mind, Phil, I am sure the historians will look back and say the UK joining the CPTPP, the new trade body, the Indo-Pacific trade body.
Right.
Huge. Absolutely huge. Because it's already responsible for 15% of global trade.
Right.
It has 500 million people, so it's bigger than the EU.
Wow.
And more interestingly, most studies and most forecasters are suggesting up to 50% of global economic growth in the next 50 years is going to come from that region.
Right.
It was established in 2018. It's got countries from Canada to Australia to Japan, you know, South American countries, Southeast Asian, Singapore, and so on. Britain is the first country to join since the inception.
Wow.
And it is huge. The potential for this is absolutely massive. And leaving politics aside, the interesting thing with it is that it's purely economic body. There is no equivalent of Brussels. There is none of those complications that we're going to be arguing with for the rest of our lives and God, goodness knows how many generations about the Brexit vote in 2016. But put that to one side. It's where the future economy is going. And China has applied to join, but it hasn't been accepted yet.
Yeah.
United States did apply to join during the Obama regime. Trump put a stop to it, but who knows what the future is going to bring.
Yeah.
But it's the way the world is going. We're based in the UK. Our nearest neighbours are Europe. We've been politically tied to Europe since 1974, economically since 1974, and then politically since the 1990s and the Maastricht Treaty and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. But I think we need as a nation to discover going back to, dare I say, empire days, and there's a big world out there.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
that's where the growth is going to come from. And
Yeah.
I think Britain is so uniquely well placed, partly because of the English language, partly because of, I notice in my own job, so I work the currency markets for my clients. I have clients all over the globe. But the good news is, in the UK, I get up in the morning, and at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, I can still speak to people in New Zealand and Australia and Japan. I can then work my way through the globe to Southeast Asia, to the Middle East, to Africa, to Europe.
Yeah.
Then in the early afternoon, the East Coast of the United States and Canada, is available. And even the West Coast, 9 o'clock in the morning in Vancouver or Los Angeles, is only 5 o'clock in the afternoon in the UK.
Yeah. Yes. That's,
So we can
yeah.
speak to clients all over the world, and if I can do it, then anybody can do it in the UK.
Yeah.
It's a real advantage. That and the English language is
Yeah.
are real huge advantages that we're not really making the most of.
Right. So we've got that huge potential there in that particular market, and there's certain advantages, like you're saying about the language and so on. Also at the same time, you look at the members, and some of those are members who are also part of the Commonwealth, who we, when we went into Europe, said, sorry, we can't trade with you anymore.
Exactly right.
And so I think of New Zealand, for example. And I think they're very, I might be right or I might be wrong, but they're very forgiving when we said we could no longer trade with them because we're now part of Europe, and therefore whole sort of sections of their economy were hit. The whole sheep farming community badly hit. I've been over there now, and I know that many of the what we would call farms, they call stations because they're so vast,
That's right.
have converted over to deer farming. And so that for them is a great trade. But when I think of the fact that they're part of that group, they seemingly have been very forgiving in terms of how we treated them and accepted us in, I can see the potential there. So thinking about international trade, and if people were considering international trade, I suppose that would be the region that you would probably encourage people to consider trading with
Absolutely.
because of
Yeah,
what the potential is.
exactly right. New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, Canada,
Yeah.
partly obviously because British speaking, so no communication issues, culturally quite similar,
Yeah.
more similar than dissimilar. The other thing is that, again, thinking about it, or perhaps medium term
Yeah.
rather than the immediate, one of the things that's happened, particularly with New Zealand, then Australia, then Canada, in that order, is that the New Zealand and Australian economies, Phil, have become a bit of a one-horse trick in that it's all about China.
Right.
The vast majority, and I'm talking 80-plus percent
Yeah.
of New Zealand meat exports is now to China, because obviously as China gets wealthier, there's a middle class who wants to eat meat.
Yeah.
And therefore, so the Australians is what they dig out of the ground, the tin and the iron and the coal and everything else that goes straight into China. New Zealand tends to be meat and dairy products that are all going to China. Now, like any farmer will tell you, it's fantastic getting a contract from one of the big supermarkets. You just need to be careful that you don't end up working for them and being
Yes.
refuge to them.
Yeah.
And I think because of the cultural ties, because of the language, I think in future there will be opportunities to re-establish those old trade ties, those historic trade ties between the UK and the New Zealands and Australians, and it'll benefit both sides. It'll benefit the consumers of both countries because more choice, But you'll also make the New Zealanders and Australians of this world less dependent, because one of the things I've noticed in a narrow view of the currency markets is when one of my clients is interested in either buying or selling Australian dollars or New Zealand dollars, the only two things you've got to look at is the data coming out of those countries plus China. If China's doing well, Australia's doing well, New Zealand is doing well. Because China does well, they increase demand for the import of Australian exports and New Zealand exports, and vice versa. It's like the same with Canada and the Canadian dollar. Really, the Canadian dollar moves up and down with oil prices. So if oil prices go up, the Canadian dollar strengthens. If oil prices come down, now, like anything else in life, there's human beings involved, so it's not an exact science. It's part science, part art. But the science part of it is those correlations. If you want to make an assessment on the Australian currency or the Australian economy or the New Zealand currency or New Zealand economy, you look at what China's doing. If you want to make an assessment on Canada and the Canadian dollar, you look at oil prices. They're the correlations these days. And you'll benefit those countries to, like Australia has done with this new submarine deal with the UK and the USA. Where Australia are going to have nuclear-powered submarines by 2025. That's a real game changer again, because it means that the Pacific will no longer just be controlled between battle between the Chinese and the Americans. The Australians are going to have nuclear capability. You know, which will put a little warning sign to the Chinese to just calm down. And behave.
Because there is that kind of posturing at the moment, isn't there? Just as prior to Russia invading Ukraine, and there was that sort of exercise that they were doing, supposed exercise that they were doing, and there's the posturing leading up to it, and then finally invading another country, and you've got obviously China and Taiwan. And the issues there, and China's absolute firm belief that Taiwan should be and is part of China, and obviously the Taiwanese having a completely different perspective on that. So there could well be a sense of unsettledness in that region. China's close links with Russia, although they've stood back a bit, but we know there's close ties there. I just wonder whether people perhaps might be reticent because they're looking at the global activities and the alliances forming and the posturing that's going on, whether that would shape some of the choices they make in terms of how they trade on a global market and where they trade on a global market.
I think it's I think like most things in life, there are two ways you can look at it. Some people will be wary of getting involved in a part of the world that could become, you know, a war zone or close to a war zone. But other people think life goes on and it may happen, it may not happen, but there are opportunities, and until it happens, when it happens, I'll deal with it. Until then, there's not a lot to think about because it's that ability of the private sector to not stand still. But to realize that regardless of whatever we think or do or may happen, may not happen, the earth's going to spin once every 24 hours and life will go on.
it will, it's not going to stop or else we're in trouble if it does.
Absolutely. No, I see a very good future for the UK, I think. The UK, as I said, you know, earlier, the economists and historians will look back on this new trade treaty and see it as groundbreaking because of the domino effect as well of other countries wanting to join as well, becoming a bigger trade body. And it really is just a trade body. But in the short term, we're in difficulties. Now, the interesting thing is, of course, locally, we've got the local elections coming up on the 4th of May.
Yes.
This is the last big political test before the general election.
Yeah,
I think in the short term, I think actually the doom and gloomers will have to take a bit of a backward seat because let's face it, for a party that's been in power since 2011, given their performance, we've got a highest tax stake, we've had the highest inflation for 40 years, we've got the highest tax stake since the end of the Second World War, and so on. If they go to the country on a selling nothing but doom and gloom, it's obvious what the result of the election is going to be.
It's going to be interesting to see how the political landscape is following the local elections. But I was just thinking as well, do you know, for a moment I was thinking back to the days when the pound was it was nearly $2 to the pound.
I
I know I'm
remember.
talking a long time ago, but but having said that, that the pound has been rallying at times, hasn't it?
Yeah,
And
it has.
I mean, how do you see us sitting on the currency market? Are we is there that sort of positive view of us improving and strengthening that, or how do you see it going?
Well, again, courtesy of the ever negative mainstream media we have in this country, I wonder how many people, normal people out in the street, outside the financial markets, outside my little bubble, know that the pound is the best performing major currency in the first quarter of this year.
I would suspect very few because of the media reporting.
But as you quite rightly said, Phil, it's a fact. It's not my opinion. It's not me wanting to talk it up or being determined to be positive in face of things. That is a fact. Of the top 16 traded currencies in the global market, the UK, the pound, the Great British pound has been the top performing currency in the first quarter of 2023.
Wow. I mean, that just hearing that is very encouraging, and it does beg the question, why are we hearing so much negativity? And like you say, you're leading up to like local elections. They're gonna shape the landscape in preparation for the general elections next year.
That's right.
And so you're thinking, why is this seemingly this emphasis in that way? And also there's sort of rumors of the Bank of England still thinking about putting up the interest rates because that is the way they see tackling high inflation. And inflation's what, 10.1%, something like that at the moment.
That's right. It picked up again. I do think, I mean, the Bank of England next meets in May, at the beginning of May. My guess is that they will put up interest rates again by a quarter of a percent, but then that'll be it. And then they'll stabilize, and by the end of the year, they'll start coming down again. Because inflation got to a 40-year high, largely or 99% of it because of energy prices, which the UK government has no control over. It's a global issue, affected everybody.
And
So therefore is a temporary blip. Sorry,
talking about
Phil.
energy prices, obviously, we've all experienced what's been going on in the energy market, and you rightly so, it's a global issue. But it's interesting, isn't it, how individual energy companies are sort of forecasting on a customer by customer basis what they see their usage will be, their expenditure will be, what your account is going to look like in the future. And I just think, thinking about my own and the energy company, the energy provider that I have, the projection was going to be that I was going to use X amount and my bill was going to be of a certain amount. And it was going to take till July 2024 for me to hit a target that they had set, not me, they had set, of what I wanted outstanding in terms of what I had in the bank kind of thing. And then all of a sudden I get a communication to say, oh no, we think it might be July 2023 that you'll hit that. And actually, again, this is something going under the radar, because the cost of energy, the energy prices, the you know, that I know there's been shifts in the price of oil and so on, and also the OPEC nations deciding to restrict supply, which artificially bolsters the cost of crude oil, and so it has a knock-on effect on everybody else. But having said that, the prices, the wholesale prices, have been coming down.
Natural gas prices are down to be to below pre-Ukraine war prices.
And yet, as consumers, we're not necessarily seeing the effects of that in our bills.
No, we're not. And it's so therefore, it's very simple, isn't it? The whole, I mean, it always makes me smile with when I look at economic analysis and economic forecasts by the great and the good, and how complicated it all is. At the end of the day, the economy is real simple. There's only two things that affect an open economy. Obviously, if it's a communist economy or centrally planned economy, then they're a different rule book altogether. But in the free world, in a democratic country, there's only two things that matter: supply and demand. And the interaction between those two results in everything else happening. Whether it's inflation, whether it's house price growth or retail sales growth or unemployment or wages or what have you, it all comes down to supply and demand. It always makes me smile, you know, when you fill up your car with petrol. You see in the news, world oil prices are going up. They immediately go up at a petrol pump.
Exactly. And yet we know the time delay in the wholesale price is what, a year, something like that?
Yet when oil prices come down, oh no, but this is the oil that we bought when they were high, so that's why we can't lower the prices. And you think, this sounds to me like you're playing with a double-sided coin.
You know,
there's
almost, again, it sounds negative, and I suppose it is in some ways, but it's almost as if we're being taken for a ride, in a sense, and then and we're footing the bill. And then I suppose it has a greater impact when you see some of the things that are going on at a government level, that you're thinking, here is ourselves, the consumer, the everyday consumer, you know, footing the bill, doing our best, abiding by the rules. And no wonder then people feel the way they do with regards to, you know, what they see in the political circles and their confidence levels, and who do I vote for? And you know, so it's a big issue for people. But all of these factors come to play in it, because it affects the everyday person.
Absolutely, it does. People, you know, it's like the subject of maths, isn't it? You know, economics is like with maths. You start talking about, you meet anybody socially, I meet people socially, you know, I very rarely talk about what I do, because most people's eyes will glaze over, because it's kind of like it's finance and it's maths and it's far too complicated. And actually, why does a currency value go up or go down? Supply and demand. It's very simple. You know, everything is to do with supply and demand. But unfortunately, we're in a world where a lot of people will use big words to make themselves sound super intelligent.
That is true.
And overcomplicate the issue. And it's sad, because there's no need. And one of the things that has most struck me in the first quarter of this year, and I can't remember where I read it, but there was a quote from somebody who was saying, you know, there's never been more information available in the world because of the internet. But information is not the same as knowledge. There is a lack of knowledge. There is a lot of information. I think that's very true. I think, you know, life is tough. Anybody who's gone through the last few years, particularly, you know, in you know, certain situations, you know, I remember launching Cosmos in 2020. The company was too young to get government help. But I was self-employed, so furlough wasn't available, and so you're on your own. Good luck. And
I empathize with you, Tony, because I was exactly the same boat. And you know, when I talk to lots of other small businesses who themselves will say, yeah, I, for whatever reason, I always sat outside of the criteria that was given for help. And yet, here we are. And
Yes,
this goes
absolutely.
back to what you said very early on about, human beings' resilience and our adaptability. And
That's right.
yes, okay, some have fallen by the wayside, and that's very sad.
Yeah.
And and especially when we've been encouraging people to be creative and be entrepreneurs and so on, and
Yeah.
then we somehow abandon them, and so they've fallen by the wayside. Yeah, it's sad. But for those of us who are still here, there is still work to do. And just picking up on your point about, I suppose in a way, keeping it simple. And it is simple, your supply and demand, but the numbers of people in my line of work that I talk to who tell me they're no good at maths, they're no good with numbers. And it's one of the very reasons why they just don't do any kind of planning. They don't plan their money on a month-by-month basis. They literally live with their head buried in the sand, or a sense of anxiety if they've got to face it. And I completely understand it. We kind of set them up in this way because we say mass is all about trigonometry and algebra and quadratic equation. And how many
Absolutely.
people in our society use those things? But they can all
Absolutely.
add, they can all subtract, they all multiply and all divide. And those are the things that we need for everyday life. And we can do it.
Absolutely.
And
Yeah.
so, yeah, it doesn't have to be complicated. And I get the point
No.
that you say about those in the sort of various sectors who like to complicate things. I always thought that of garage mechanics. You know, you walk up, looking at, oh, it's your big end that's gone. And I'm thinking, what's a
It's a
big
sharp
end?
intake of breath, isn't it, that kills you? Oh, Phil, this is gonna. Oh, this is. Oh.
Yeah, that huge sigh sounds very expensive.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Exactly
but
right.
Tony, this
No,
has
I
been
think
absolutely brilliant.
I think Phil, just to finish up, I think there's huge opportunities because one of the things we haven't had time to touch on, but if you think about it, I remember back to my days in the City of London before I specialized in foreign exchange. I was involved in merchant banking and property finance. And in an ever rising market, one of the things I learned is in an ever rising market, you could build the wrong thing in the wrong place at the wrong time. But if the market goes up by 20%, you make a profit and you're a genius. And what I'm suggesting there is that we've had a decade and a bit of ultra low interest rates, where interest rates have never been so low in the history of the world as they were between sort of 2009 and 2021. Okay, never ever ever in the history of the Bank of England that goes back to the 16 whatever it is, have interest rates been so low yet. Trouble is, if you're in your early 30s, you started your career with interest rates at ultra low. You've had a decade. You've probably got married. You've got kids. You've changed house, and you got used to it. And you think, in your world view, that is the norm. It isn't the norm. The norm. I remember my first mortgage. Again, courtesy of my daughter, I'm a dinosaur. So my first mortgage, was back in the 1980s, and I was delighted because interest rates had just fallen to 7.75%. Yes, a result.
Tony, I mine was at 15%.
I remember paying 15%. I
Absolutely.
remember paying 15%. So we've got different point of view. Now, where I am very excited about the future for any individual who's prepared to put their back into it and do something and provide a service is this. There are a lot of banks, there are a lot of businesses out there that can be classified, to use an accounting term, as zombie banks or zombie businesses. They're called zombies because the only reason they're still here is because borrowing rates have been so low, they've been able to borrow their way and survive. But now interest rates are going up, they're going to the wall. There's been more bank failures in the United States in the last 3 months than in the last 15 years.
Wow, wow, wow.
Why? Because the tide is going out. Now we will see which boats have got engine power to maneuver and which are going to be left stranded.
Yes, that's a really good analogy, is that, Tony? Yeah, it's... Yeah, on the one hand, there's tremendous opportunities going forward, and that is really the positive side. On the other hand, it's probably going to sift us a lot more.
Oh, yes. Big changes. Big changes. Yeah. But the UK, again, is well-placed because our regulations, they're not perfect. They're far from perfect, but they're a lot stricter than they are in other parts of the world, like the USA and in Europe. So if our banks get affected, it will be an absolute disaster zone for the American and European banking system. So we're actually, again, this country is in a good position financially because the restrictions on the banks are so that some might get in trouble, but you won't be on the scale of other countries around the globe. So comparatively, I'm feeling very positive about the UK economy and the outlook for the pound, generally speaking.
On that note, Tony, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. And lovely to see you again. And I hope you'll join us in the not too distant future again on Wisdom Chat for a kind of another update. But just before you go, Tony, Cosmos, tell us just very briefly about Cosmos and how people could get hold of you.
Okay, thank you, Phil. So Cosmos, what we do is we provide currency payment solutions that are tailor-made for the individual. So there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach. We can help. It's never been easier to have international clients because everybody's online, but the banking system hasn't developed yet. So it's easy to get a client overseas, but receiving money from that client or making payments to an overseas supplier is as complicated as it's ever been, unless you know your way around the ecosystem. I've been around a while, so I think I like to know a little bit about my way around the ecosystem. And our approach at Cosmos is very simple. There isn't one size fits all. Every client is an individual, and we will find a tailor-made solution specific to those clients' requirements. The website is very simply www.cosmoscurrencyexchange.com, and all the contact details will be on there.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Tony, and have a great rest of the day, won't you?
Thank you very much, Phil. Thank you for the invite. Always a pleasure to see you.
And you.